of pills that caused hundreds of overdose deaths and cost each of the two counties about $1 billion in law enforcement, social services, and court expenses. The civil case marks the first time pharmacies have been found responsible in the nationwide epidemic. After hearings in the spring, the trial judge will determine how much each company should pay the counties. CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart said they would appeal the verdict. President Joe Biden today nominated Shalonda Young to serve as the director of the Office of Management and Budget. Young is portrayed as having enough support from both Democrats and Republicans to gain Senate confirmation. In addition today, Biden nominated Nani Coloretti, a Filipina-American, to serve as deputy director of the Budget Office. In making the announcement, Biden described OMB as the nerve center of government. An 8-year-old boy became the 6th person to die after a man drove his SUV into a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, on Sunday. Jackson Sparks is the first child to die from the violence. His 12-year-old brother, who was also injured, has been discharged from the hospital. 5 others were killed, and at least 62 were injured. The driver of the SUV, Daryl Brooks Jr., was charged with 5 counts of intentional homicide, and charges related to a 6th death and the dozens of injuries will be forthcoming. Brooks faces a mandatory life sentence if convicted. Currently in Washington, it's sunny and 46 degrees. In New York, it's sunny and 39. I'm Asghiya Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
And the previous program was Leonard Lopez at Large, which is heard usually Monday through Friday, usually at 1 p.m. And stay tuned for the minefield coming up. But before we go into that program, I just wanted to inform the listeners that in regards to the trial of Greg and Travis McMichael and William Roddy Bryant, were all found guilty of and we will find out they were all found guilty in responsible for the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, and we'll find out more details about that during the WBAI evening news at 6 p.m. But I just wanted to share with the listening audience again that Greg and Travis McMichaels and William Bryant were all found guilty during this trial that happened in Georgia. Okay? So, the time now is 3 minutes past 2 p.m. Stay tuned for the minefield coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
Hard day? Harriet Tubman wouldn't feel sorry for you. She'd tell you to get out of that bed and stop crying in your carrot chips. Do something useful. Donate to WBAI. Call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or go online to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. And you will start to feel like the good bishop singing this song.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Usually would be the minefield, as I was saying earlier, but we break into this program with a special report giving a little bit more detail about what just happened in Georgia from Paul DiRienzo, who is the producer as well as the anchor of the WBAI Evening News. So, Paul, are you there?
I'm here. You got me?
Yes, I do got you. So take it away.
Great. All right. Thank you very much. All three men have been charged in Arbery's death. The death of Ahmaud Arbery have been convicted of murder. All three white men charged in the death of Ahmaud Arbery were convicted of murder today in the fatal shooting that became part of a larger national reckoning on racial injustice. The convictions for Greg McMichael's son Travis McMichael and neighbor William Roddy Bryan came after jurors deliberated for about 10 hours. The men face minimum sentences of life in prison, and it's up to the judge to decide whether that comes with or without the possibility of parole. And the story, it began a year ago with the McMichaels grabbing guns, jumping into the back of a pickup truck, and pursuing a 25-year-old black man, Ahmaud Arbery. After seeing him running in their neighborhood, it turned out he was a jogger, and that's in the Georgia port city of Brunswick. That happened in February of 2020. Bryan joined the pursuit in his own pickup and recorded cell phone video of Travis. He was also apparently now found guilty, alleged at the time, of using his truck to help box in Arbery as after a 5-minute basically chase down the streets of the community in which Arbery was jogging. The case revolved around an 1863 law known as citizen's arrest, which allowed people, and which was subsequently actually thrown out by the Georgia legislature. It was but at the time, and it was a law that was in place during the trial and was used during the trial since the crime happened at the time the law was in place, which allowed people to have a very low bar for using their weapons to forcibly arrest a person that they believed had committed a crime, often without any evidence. This had been used, as it turned out in the testimony and in commentary afterwards, was a link to Georgia's role in the enslavement of human beings prior to and during the Civil War, and was part of a slave catcher system. One of the interesting aspects that came out during this trial, when the verdict was read, there was an outburst of joy, really, and cheering from the spectators area, and it was that of Marcus Arbery, who is Ahmaud's father, and he was then ordered removed from the courtroom. Travis McMichael, his father, and Roddy McMichael, his father, Gregory McMichael, and Roddy really sat fairly stone-faced, didn't show emotion. I noticed as the older McMichael was led away after the verdict, he did seem to stumble at the doorway as the marshals or the authorities led him out. During the trial, basically the defense relied on attacking the character of Ahmaud Arbery, but since there was no actual crime ever reported or committed in anything having to do with his run through the neighborhood in which he was cut off and boxed in a 5-minute chase and then shot dead with a shotgun, the only thing they had left was to attack the man. The prosecutor in the case, Linda Denikowski, her closing arguments were roundly praised as powerful and really left no doubt that felony murder. Now, the difference, I understand, in Georgia law between felony murder and malice murder came up in the trial, in the verdict. Felony murder is murder that is committed in the course of a felony, and that was described by the prosecutor as similar to someone who accompanies an armed robber or is in the is committing an armed robbery with no intent to shoot the person, but the gun goes off for some reason and the person is shot. All the people who are involved in that crime are potentially liable for murder. Then there was another charge of malice murder. Roddy Bryan was acquitted of two counts of malice murder, and I've heard a few explanations of that. And again, we'll have to leave that to the experts in Georgia law, why the jury decided to out of many charges, it seemed like about 27 or so charges, to find two of the defendants not guilty on two for Roddy Bryan and one for Travis St. Michael were found not guilty. But that, I think, had to do with the technicalities of the law. As it is, the judge has more than enough reason or rationale to, under Georgia law, sentence them all to life in prison. It was a day that will be remembered in the state of Georgia and in the United States. I'm Paul D'Rienzo reporting.
Thank you, Paul. And Paul D'Rienzo will be back at 6 p.m. for a full report from the WBAI Evening News at 6 p.m. We return to the minefield already in progress. It is now almost 12 minutes past 2 p.m.
Scientists as the natural human being to say that there's no such thing as natural immunity. Immunity is a system that our bodies work to keep us alive, to bring stasis to us. When an infection, whether it be bacterial, fungal, viral, right? Our bodies heal those, right? We get a cut. The body is so intelligent that the genes cut on to repair where the area is. First, we send all these different types of T cells and B cells and flood the body with natural antivirals, right, to stop an infection. Then the body starts to heal over time. So I'm really taken aback that a person that is trained as a medical doctor does not understand those systems. Tell you that there's no such thing as natural immunity when there was no
vaccine. I think she was speaking hyperbolically. You know, she was saying that with respect to this particular infection. You know, like that that natural immunity wasn't a factor. One of the things I wondered about, and I heard it kind of validated for me on Gary Noel. I remember that when we test for hepatitis B, we test for the core antigen and the capsule antigen. I said, wow, it seems like when we fight an infection, we produce, you know, antibodies towards more than one spot on the virus, and maybe over time, more than one period of time for the virus. I heard he had a person on his show that spoke, you know, kind of validated this, that this, the specific immunity they're giving you in the vaccine is in some way, yeah, is somehow less than natural immunity. And in fact, they're not even giving it to you. They're making your body do it. They're injecting some mRNA to fool your ribosome into producing a protein from the virus. That seems like a very complicated process.
One spike protein.
Yeah, exactly. A single, you forgot the adjective they use in front of it. Mm-hmm. Harmless. You know, Amos Wilson taught us about that double speak, you know. Yes. When they want to talk about something that damages you, they say the correction system. You know what I mean? When they want to talk about something that makes you unhealthy, they say the health system. Anyway, I'm going to probably have to cut a lot of this out because I only have a half hour that I can do. But I think she was speaking hyperbolically. Are there any circumstances that you think the government would be justified in coercing people to a specific medical treatment or preventive? Are there any set of circumstances you could envision in which that was justified?
You know, I'm going to speak, you know, as I've done this whole interview. It's from my own personal belief that any government is overreaching when they're forcing something into you that potentially could cause harm. I don't think there's any circumstance where any government should take the health of its citizens into their hands by force. I think the government's role should be to recommend and to educate. And I think that this government, in particular in the United States and in particular in New York City, New York State, has been remiss in educating its citizens on what is health. I mean, if we look at, for years, we've had this food pyramid. We've been taught 3 meals a day. I remember my dad used to always talk about, they taught us to eat bacon and eggs. They advertised that to us growing up, knowing that bacon and eggs would cause, you know, obesity, cause a heart disease, diabetes, and all these other things. So I asked people to date, if the government is so concerned for you, why wouldn't they control fast food, which we know is harming the population and all of these other so-called things that they call comorbidities, which literally translates to with death, you're living with death. Why wouldn't they regulate that industry? Because it's a tie to capitalism. So I think it's overreach, and they have been remiss. They have failed in their job of education and protecting the general public and educating the general public on what health is, what is healthy eating. We have a new incoming mayor, Eric Adams, that says he's a vegetarian or vegan. Let's see if any programs will come across, sweeping across the city to educate people to that end. But I haven't seen, and I think that is the government's role. I don't think it is their role to mandate and force people to any types of treat. I think it's
coerce. To educate. Yes.
Coerce.
Yes. I don't know. Interesting. Listening to Mindfield on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you like our speakers, if you like our music, if you like the station, please donate by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or by going online at give2wbai.org. That's give, the number 2, wbai.org. Let's now return to that interview. Interesting. We're living in interesting times. Now, they say that you're selfish to not get a vaccine because you're only thinking about yourself and not the community in general. What do you think about that?
They have not proven that the vaccine has stopped the infection. If we just study what's in the general media, right, the infections are still raging on because this is, I would say that we're in an endemic stage when it comes to SARS-CoV-2. AKA COVID-19. I don't think that it can go anywhere. I mean, one, it's an airborne virus. It attacks the respiratory system. Two, it can infect and live inside other animals, squirrels, other rodents, dogs, cats, so on and so forth. So it's an infection just like the flu that's here to stay with us. So why keep playing these games with masks that don't work and stop infection, right? They didn't. I thought they would have mailed every American a box of N95s, right? They didn't do that. But they played all these other games from the Trump administration to the Biden administration that hasn't stopped this infection. So I just think, you know, Doc, it's a joke. I think that there are other nefarious things at work. We don't have to get into that. We only have a limited time here. But we can extrapolate, and people need to use their 5 common sense to ascertain what's going on. It proved that this vaccine has stopped the infection, and then present that proof to the population, and the population should see it and should react to it. But when we look at it, people are still being infected. COVID-19 is not going anywhere. So why should I inject myself with something that is not working as it's purported to work? I mean, I think it's foolhardy. I think it's ignorant to say those things to the general public and think that we are that uncated and that fearful that we will just accept anything that you say. I don't accept anything from this government that way.
Do you know that there are people who get angry at us just having this conversation, you know? Asking these questions, it feeds into what you were saying about the way that it's being presented on the TV, where you get it multiple times an hour all day long. It's more like religion than science. And, you know, the only way you could really run into a catastrophe where everybody would get wiped out is if you make everybody do exactly the same thing. You know, I mean, this, they don't have absolute knowledge, so they don't think it'll hurt you. They have statistics, I'm sure, on what one vaccination will do, but do they have any on what one plus a booster, plus the booster's mm-hmm. booster, plus the booster's, and suppose this goes on for years, do they have any statistics on that? So if they don't, I'm not blaming them for that. How could they? What I'm blaming them for is having so much confidence in their beliefs that they force people that have different beliefs to do something different. More education than the people who are the people who are mandating it.
Yes.
You know, it's very, very interesting. More education, Doc, more experience.
Now, Doc, you brought up a terminology which is very integral to this conversation. Belief.
Yes.
It's not a realm in which belief is necessary. Can we agree with that? Right. So that's
well, in science, a hypothesis, you know what I mean, is, and I'm saying that's their hypothesis, and they are acting as though it has been proven, and they are angry with anybody that just doesn't have the confidence in them with the record that they have. The specific people we're talking about, big pharma, felons, the CDC, and all they label your view of it conspiracy. Yes. Conspiracy theory, you know, as though we're supposed to believe in a coincidence theory. You know what I mean? But go ahead, Brother Nova.
You know what's funny, Doc? You everything that you're bringing up is so, it's so laughable that you have to, if you don't believe that, then you're shunned. I mean, it's almost to the point where you start to see, right, all of these conspiracy theories that they're saying are theories. Right. But you start to see them as realities. Right. We are product of a great conspiracy. Me and you are men that are descended from Africa. But we here we have English or German or Irish names. Right.
Yeah.
We are speaking Angle, a.k.a. English, a language from Germany and from the Emerald Isles of England. Right. Yes. And that one time, people conspired to take us from our homelands in Western Africa, in the Congo River Basin, and so on and so forth, to transport us through the Middle Passage of the European slave trade to the Caribbean, Central and South America, and eventually North America, Mexico, United States, and Canada, what became those countries. And people would say, can you imagine, we were in our village somewhere prior to 1492, somebody brought us this and said this was going to be your reality. We would say that's not reality. Because at that time it wasn't, but it became people that conspired to create this reality. So we are very much living through not conspiratorial, theoretical conspiracies or conspiracy theories. We're living in a conspiracy itself. We are product of conspiracy, you and I,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so people need to open their eyes and be open and be realistic. And I must reach out to and give shout outs to the citizens of Australia for standing up, the citizens in Romania, the citizens in Sweden and the UK for standing up for their rights, and for our brothers and sisters here for standing up for their rights. I mean, this is government overreach with something that is the hypothesis has consistently been proven wrong. Their belief is strong, but I think reality, our reality and linking ourselves to that reality is stronger, and we must keep fighting and standing up against these. The only word I can say is draconian. It's devilish. You know, our illustrious teacher, Elijah Muhammad, you know, taught us many things, saying that this system is wicked and is devilish. Those are the only words that I can attach to what is going on today, you know?
Yes, I think people not having adequate math skills, too, you know, keeps people from being able to calculate risk, you know, calculate risk. And you know what they're going to say if some children, if their calculations turn out to be wrong?
They give you an X.
Sorry. They're going to say sorry. And that's it.
You know? That's got to be it. It's happened in the past. It's happened in the past.
Absolutely.
Look in 1976. What was that? The
swine flu vaccination.
Swine flu vaccination.
Yeah, I mean, 500 people with Guillain-Barré. Sorry.
I mean, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. It's not like it's the first time. I mean, if not next time, maybe we'll wear a gas mask in 2023.
I want to call you Dr. Felder like your dad, but Brother Felder, you are, it's been a very wonderful conversation, and I just feel bad that I'm not going to be able to air the entire thing. I'm going to have to chop it and cut it and take some things out. I really appreciate your sharing the information with us. You take care of yourself. Your father is proud, trust me.
Oh,
ancestor Jack Felder is proud.
Dr. Jack Felder. Elder, to CEMOTAP. Thank you, Dr. Mack, to CEMOTAP, to all the work that you are doing over the decades now. We're going to 40 years, I believe, right?
Yes.
We're going into 40 years. Thank you for everything. And thank you for thinking about little old me to bless your program with my energy and my voice. And,
see, you know, Brother Nova, the years go by so fast. I asked an audience recently, I said, how many people here were born after 1984? Because I wanted to tell them what happened when they put the Haitians as being a just the idea that you're a Haitian, AIDS. They claim that just being Haitian was a risk factor for AIDS. And these youngsters did not know anything about it because most of the audience had been born after 1984. The first demonstration I was in, I guess, must have been in about 1963. With you know how many years ago that was? I mean, way longer than that. It was, you know, correct. So at any rate, again, Brother Nova, really appreciate you and give my regards to your family also.
Stay not a problem. Thank you, Doc.
Peace and blessings. Okay. Thank you, Brother Nova. Okay.
No problem. Thank you.
This is the end of the minefield for today. We'll be back next week at 2 p.m. Wednesday on Minefield. Right now, we're going to let our musicians take us out of here and tell us our responsibilities towards WBAI. Thank you. Just heard us on the Minefield on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you like us, our topics, our guests, our music, or you just like the station, please donate by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, or by going online at give2wbai.org. That's give the number 2. WBAI.org.
A snake, a stick, it is John Show. It's a thorn in your hand, and a cut on your toe. A point, a cream, a bee, a bite, a brink, a buzzard, a sudden stroke of night.
Professor Dr. Ron Daniels. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit proudly announces the Community Cares Listening Line for Black first responders and essential workers. We're here and we're listening. The Community Cares Listening Line is a free, confidential service staffed with responsive volunteers who can provide emotional support and share information with our callers. If you're feeling anxious, afraid, distressed, burdened, or overwhelmed by a range of emotions, please call the Community Cares Listening Line at 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117.
Join us on November 26th to December 12th at Cinema Village, Sinopolis, and virtually as we celebrate 29 years of the ADIFF, the film festival that always brings you great films about people of color all over the world. Discover over 70 entertaining and revealing fiction and documentary films, including 38 world, U.S., and New York premieres. The African Diaspora International Film Festival from November 26th to December 12th. For tickets and schedule, go to NYADIF.